Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Drive-Thru HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about things that HR people care about. So let's get right to it. Jasmine, welcome back to Drive-Thru HR.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It is going great. It's sort of blue skies, and, you know, it's not 115 degrees, so... Great hotel, great event, summer brand camp. We're out here in the Dallas area, so good times there. So if you would, introduce yourself to our listeners, Jasmine, and then we'll jump into it after that.
Sure. My name is Jasmine Brand, and I am Dallas-born and raised, and I have a branding and communications company called BrandPoint. My last name really is Brand. I always tell my mom this is why you should be happy I didn't go to law school, because things happen for a reason. But I've been doing branding and marketing probably for the last, on my own, for the last 7 to 8 years. Before that, I was actually worked for Nationwide Insurance. So we basically work with individuals on personal branding matters, but we also work with companies too, trying to figure out a way for people to connect with them in a fun, easier way.
Well, fantastic. So what's top of mind for you today, Jasmine?
You know, what I always think is kind of interesting is the term brand. It's it's used a lot now. And so it's always important to clarify what branding means, but I think it changes based on the person's experiences. And so I always like to when I talk to people about branding, tell them my definition of it. But I think it's probably sometimes a mixture of the traditional definition, but also probably my Jasmine spin on it. And for me, you know, branding is about identity. It's about connecting people in a kind of visceral way. And so that's kind of what I've done is taken these concepts of how do we get people to connect to you personally, your identity, or from a corporate perspective, how do we get people to connect with your stuff that makes companies kind of cool. And so I think branding is always a topic that is something that is a little bit more exciting these days because everyone seems to be excited about the fact that they have control over their own personal brand. So I've definitely gotten to talk a lot more about it because I think it's a topic that's definitely people are more interested about it today.
Well, good. Yeah, and I think what a great place to start is just – I guess where has your opinion changed over the last, few years, or the more you get into, your experience and knowledge and outcomes, working with all that, working with clients, where is your, from start to finish, where has your take on brand, like what it means, like what it feels like, has it changed at all? Or are you where you started? Like, you pretty much are like, yep, this is what I thought, and there's really, it haven't changed much, or has there been an evolution? Let me ask the question that way.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's exciting. It changes actually every day, which is probably why I love the work that I do. But yes, it's definitely changed. And I'd say we have more freedom. I also think, too, the things that used to matter a lot more. So how you look, how much money you have, how big your network is still important. But I think now branding has changed in the fact that if you're creative, if you're innovative, if you've got some cool standards in place, people in a really awesome way, that I think it's the great equalizer now. So I think that's why branding is kind of fascinating these days, because you can have a blogger that's from Covington, Kentucky, which is where we grew up, tiny little town outside of Cincinnati. You can have a blogger sitting in their bedroom and have just as much power as a big, huge company, a big brand. So I think it's been exciting to see it evolve. But sometimes with all that freedom, there's also becomes some need to restrict and have some structure around it too because of all the freedom. So I think if anything, it's evolved where all of us have a chance now to connect with a brand. We all have the power to have a powerful brand now too. It doesn't really matter how much money you have or what you look like, which is what I think it used to be about. And now I think anyone now has a fair game.
So do you give us some – let's go start and stop exercise here. So what are some things that just your – like just practitioners, HR practitioners, you know, marketing folks, I mean just pretty much anybody, what should they start doing today? And then that's first half of the question. Then what should they stop doing today when it comes to thinking about brand?
I think overthinking it, actually. What's kind of interesting, even just with the topic of social media, because I think sometimes they overlap, is we kind of overthink a whole lot. And I think actually taking it back to the basis of your identity. And so a common exercise that I give individuals and companies a lot when we get started is typically if it takes longer than a minute or two for me to get what's going on, it tells me we need to kind of come in and be a little bit more succinct. But I always ask, you only have three words, how would you describe what you do or what you are? And that's usually really challenging for some big brands and big companies because there's just so much stuff. And so I think probably the first step is to not overthink it and get back to the basics, kind of think about what your core values are. And I think that's usually the root of a really good strategic marketing or branding plan is if you can identify what you're about and what you symbolize, then you can kind of build on from there. But typically when I see a disconnect in branding or marketing is when there's a disconnect between what's being portrayed externally versus what's actually really going on.
Well, it's great to talk about that disconnect factor because most of them, when they kick off with their brand awareness initiative, in the meanwhile, that's the factor I think they miss and then find out that, okay, there is a disconnect and that's the failure. So initially, what do you think, you know, what makes a brand attractive in the first place?
Yeah, I think they are bold. You know, what's interesting over the last couple of years, social media I think has made us all a little bit narcissistic. And the fact that I have a friend actually that he takes a lot of selfies. And she'll take about 30 or 40 of those selfies, and she'll end up with one. And even that one is still not right. So I think what social media does is made us very narcissistic, but I think that's actually okay. One of the things that brands could do to be an attractive hot brand, if you will, is to be bold. I think sometimes we're kind of scared to get out there and dip our toe in the water. And so it's easy to stick to what we know. And so sometimes that tends to be very formulaic and scheduled. But I think it's sometimes okay to be a little crazy with a K. I think it's okay to sometimes get out there and try some new stuff. And I know that's challenging, too, depending on the industry. But I think we all can push the envelope in a variety of ways. So I think being a little bold and actually embracing the good stuff, not being afraid to actually brag a little bit, I think is one of the things that attractive hot brands do.
Wonderful. Well, in fact, you know, we wanted to touch base a little bit about that attractive factor because, as you said, most of the companies use social media as a tool. Of course, that is correct. But some of them, as you're saying, social media is a primary thing. But when you talk about the authenticity, which is lacking, because, you know, what I'm saying is like everybody cannot be, you know, Zappos or Google, and they project a factor that we have a fun culture and put up some videos and make some crazy videos, but when an employee stepped into that organization, things are different. Mm-hmm. So what do you say when it comes to becoming authentic while projecting a brand?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I think so. A great point on Zappos. I mean, that Zappos has done a great job of taking the corporate culture and adapting that to social media. You know, not all companies are fun companies, and that's actually okay. I think where you get in trouble is when it's not authentic is when we want once again replicate what someone else is doing. And the only reason why we do that, I'll give you an example. I know when I was in fit, I dressed to be dorky. And so what I would do is because I didn't know what was cool, I would just copy what other people were wearing. Now, it didn't matter if it didn't fit me or if it actually wasn't a good fit. I just copied what they were doing because that's what I thought was cool. And after a while, I started to get my own personal style that fit for me. And I think it's the same kind of analogy here. You look at what other people are doing, but then you take the pieces that fit you. I think it becomes inauthentic when we try to pretend things that we're not. It goes back to those core values. If my three words or a company's three words are stable, loyal, solid, then social branding marketing should be aligned with those three words. If you don't have fun and kick-ass or crazy in those three words, then I probably wouldn't do anything that was probably fun or kick-ass either. And I think that's okay because you're being in line. You're in line with what your goals are.
Well, and so to kind of take it back up to 30,000 feet, what do folks do, and what do people do when they have leadership that has a brand that is completely misaligned with the company from a culture standpoint? How do you, what are talking points? How do you navigate that? I mean, how would you approach that? Or maybe you have approached that in the past.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Our company gets requests to do a lot of social, cool, fun stuff. And one of the things that I've determined, this is over time, being in business now for 8 years, it's changed for me personally. We before would have all these really cool, fun ideas social media-wise and get in and get ready to start implementing with running into all these roadblocks and realize, which is why brand point, it's brand point and communication because they go hand in hand. And so now what I do and what we do is we do a communications assessment first because if the communications is not in line, if you don't have a good process and structure in place, social won't work. So if you guys argue, kind of like if a couple fights in front of you, I just actually went to a dinner party a week ago and the couple was fighting in front of me and I was like, what happens when we leave? Oh my gosh. So it's the same thing. If you don't have a cohesive communications plan in place, social and branding, all the cool fun stuff, it's harder. So typically when I speak to leadership, I tie it to an ROI. I tie it to both the financial ROI, but also the social ROI. And then what we try to do is figure out a way to collaborate the two. So typically, I've found success when we tie it to some sort of metric or benchmark as opposed to just talking social, because social is still new, and branding too, quite honestly, still new for a lot of companies. So tying it to a specific metric or ROI typically is a great way to have that kind of conversation.
Wonderful. Well, in fact, while we talk about the ROI, what are some metrics that you wanted to communicate to our audience while they're working on their brand and then making sure they are going on the right path and then that the continuous improvement is happening and measuring the success of building their brand?
Yeah, I think the metrics change based on the organization and what your goals are, but I think there's a couple of basic general ones. I think kind of like a mirror check, if you will. Typically we create these plans. They sound really awesome on paper. We get going. Things seem to be functioning and working well. But one of the things that benchmark, I like how is this plan or how is this initiative or campaign affecting us? Not necessarily just the social aspects of it, but what kind of effect is it having on the organization or the individual themselves? A lot of times you can roll out a really cool branding and marketing plan, but if the individual or company is not in the place to support that, then you're going to meet failure. So I think setting benchmarks in there, a mirror check, if you will, that things are still going okay. Because a lot of times we are so excited about a lot of fresh ideas, we want change, but we don't always aren't always realistic about is this good for us right now. So I think a mirror check is really good. I think engagement, which is we say that phrase a lot, but engagement is really important. And it's employee engagement, but it's also your external engagement, too. Do people like what they're doing or care about it? It could look great on paper, but are people actually enjoying what they're doing? So I think those are two really good, and they're subjective, too. So I think that also gets back to the communication. So that's my third benchmark is a communications benchmark. Are there things in place where we can actually talk about what's going on? But social and branding, they are subjective. And quite honestly, I sometimes feel like I'm a therapist or a psychologist because we're talking about identity. The way we, at brand point, identify with branding, it's identity. So a lot of times you have to get to the core of stuff, like the yucky stuff sometimes, to get to the good stuff. So setting up time to communicate is important, needed when you get to doing anything branding or social related.
Great. Well, as you were saying, you know, with the emergence of social media and the evolution of new marketing and branding initiatives and innovations, you know what, there are new roles have been emerging in the organizations, like community managers or content specialists or something like that. So as you're talking about the brand engagement, what are some roles that you say must have roles in an organization in order to have a continuous brand engagement? Because there has to be somebody dedicatedly working for this particular role, right?
Well, I think that's true, but I also feel like the entire company is the branding marketing department. And what's interesting is working corporate and then working for myself, you know, getting to see both of those kind of sides, a small business owner too, that everyone is a part of the brand. And it's tiring and exhausting because it's a 24/7, the same way you answer your phones, the way your email first line. So I really think it's a different mindset. A lot of times, you know, traditional companies and big companies, of course, it's kind of bifurcated out where you've got, you know, your separate marketing and you've got sales and HR. But I think true collaboration and true kind of branding magic happens when the teams kind of come together and we all keep a little piece of everything. So even community managers, we work with community managers at companies, and one of the things we always do is tie everything back to ROI, the social and the financial. You tie it to those, then you can talk to both sides of the house, if you will. Sometimes you go talk to finance, they don't really understand if you're talking to social. And sometimes for your marketing team, if you talk all finance or numbers, it's kind of difficult to have that conversation. So I think creating an environment where people feel like they have a voice and they have a say in it is also really helpful too. But everyone really, in today's world, is changing so fast in our new digital medium. I mean, companies, brands, Friday, they could have a different company. Someone could tweet something on Friday, and then Monday the company has completely changed the landscape for the company. So I think you also have to adopt that kind of 24/7 newsroom style format too, where everyone's a part of the branding process.
Jasmine, what is your philosophy or, I guess, direction you give clients on? They've got a bunch of different, like, platforms now, right? With Twitter, with Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I mean, LinkedIn. So when you're presenting, like, a headshot or pictures you're putting out there, like, of, you know, on your profile, what's your suggestion on that?
For the individual or for the company?
Yeah, for the individual.
Oh, as far as the type of content that they should be putting and what kind of platforms they should be using?
Yeah, more just like consistency of brand, right? Is it all right to have some pictures that aren't exactly as good and then other pictures that are, you know, kind of maybe a little more goofy versus a little more professional, stoic? I mean, just what are thoughts on that? Because I know people wrestle with, I'm not going to change it because I got this one good picture and that's it, you know.
Yeah, I think from a personal brand individual perspective, anyone can connect with you at any moment, any time of the day. So I think a lot of times we forget that the social platforms are open for the world to see, even if we mark certain things private. I mean, really nothing's private at this point. So I typically, from a platform perspective, I always say pick one that you know that is natural to your voice and the one that you want to connect with. The reason why I say that is even with me hiring people, they a lot of times people focus purely on LinkedIn. They think that that's the only place that I as an employer are going to look to connect and find out more information. I look at everything. So I don't think it's – and then people change their voice or how they – so they'll have a suit on LinkedIn and then on Facebook it's like whatever. You know, it's not consistent. So I think you have to pick the platform that is for your voice, that feels natural for you and comfortable, so that if I tap and click on that is who you are. But I think – any platform, if you create it, it has to have your best foot forward. So I think if you got a great photo that works, great, but I always like to get a second opinion on that too. I also think it depends on your industry too. Like I was working with a woman, she's an attorney, and there's only so much room she has as far as a lot of the photos. So hers was pretty standard and solid, and that was actually okay. What we focused on was the type of content she shared on her LinkedIn page, because that was where she could be a little creative and a little innovative. So I think it depends on your industry. I also think pick one platform if that's your voice and choose that to be your main focus. But also know if you've already created all the platforms, to put your best foot forward. I typically like to have the same photo on every platform. But once again, if you're in a super creative industry, you may be changing that more often too. So when all else fails, pick one solid photo and have the same thing on all the platforms.
Interesting. So what are some horrible or probably terrible media mistakes that you have seen people make and that has damaged their brand?
Some terrible mistakes on their platforms?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So Instagram is the biggest culprit. And what's interesting, I was actually just hiring interns. And these aren't high school age interns. They were actually after college graduation. And their Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn was perfect. I get on Instagram. I think one of the things, their profile name, I think that's something that people still forget. They will have a professional LinkedIn profile, which is great, but the Twitter profile name is not necessarily professional. So you kind of have to choose, you know, if you're going to use social media as a communications tool, then you have to also remember that that's going to be a communications tool for maybe future partners or employers too. So profile names, I think that's one biggie. I also think having arguments, a conversation, certain conversations that are appropriate. On Twitter, I see this a lot too, where people will kind of go back and forth or they're arguing or tagging people. I think, once again, it's remembering, yes, it feels personal, but it's still a communications tool for everyone. So I think forgetting that it's not something that anyone can see is probably one of the biggest culprits.
Great. Let's talk about rebranding, because we have seen that organization, they have a different brand in the beginning, but then it turns out that it's not working, or probably due to any mergers or acquisition, they wanted to rebrand their organization, and they've been successfully doing that. But how about if an organization that has a bad reputation, for example, mm-hmm. and they wanted to rebrand their organization, what are some tips and techniques that you wanted to communicate to them?
Sure. I think you have to be careful on this. I'm working with a client now that's kind of dealing with the same thing, and we've been talking about, should you change your name? Should you change some of these visual identity markers that people are used to associating with? Well, you really have to determine if you go that route where you're changing everything, then does it also suggest that you're no longer acknowledging the past? So I think one of the first things are, and I always go back to this three-word exercise because it always works, is what are our core values at this point? And did the controversy or the reputation issue, did it affect one of those three values? Typically, when companies have to rebrand, it's because they've gotten off track from those three core values. So I always start with our foundation. What do you want to connect things when they are doing rebrands? I think that's fun. I think it's keeping it fresh. But I also think that it's important, though, to hold on to something of the company that still works. I think we often are quick to leave what we had without really reviewing what worked and what should we maintain. So I think doing the quickest assessment analysis of, is there anything that we can keep? Is there any part of the current branding that should be consistent or maybe even overlap into this new brand? So quick analysis of where we are, what to keep before we kind of move forward, I think is really, really important. I think bringing in stakeholders into the discussion. I've worked with a couple of companies where they've done this complete rebrand, and they didn't really get any feedback from the actual people that would be dealing with the brand on a daily basis. So once again, we're back to that disconnect. So I think involving people that care about the brand, not just kind of your C-level executives or up or higher, in that discussion is really, really important. Getting their feedback and getting their opinion on what's good and what's not, I think is going to ensure probably long sustainable success if you do the rebrand.
So, and great, I mean, great information, because, again, branding is one of those terms that has been used so many different ways now. More than 5 years ago, it's a different, you know, we have a different landscape that we deal with as far as defining kind of what people think about that. So
sure.
How, like, from a company perspective, we talked pre-show. You came from corporate. You've been in corporate America, high level. Where do you see corporations like just absolutely hitting the mark on brand? Like ones where you're like, okay, they really nailed that, and that's impressive.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be companies that start to listen, and that sounds really kind of simplistic, but it's truly what's happening actually with social. So we could look at social media as a great example. There are some big brands just killing it on social. Red Bull is one of my faves, actually. They just are killing it. And when you go on there, it's so customized to the experience of the user. And that's actually what I think branding essentially is. You know, we figure out who we are so that we can meet the need of the people that want to connect with us. So I think the companies that start to get that are the ones that are going to be braced for real success. So really, an identification is it's assessment, but it is almost, like I said earlier, it's a therapy session, if you will. Companies that get kind of in there and figure out who they are and what that looks like, what it feels like, and touch it and smell it, like all these things that before was just kind of a black and white world. And to your question earlier about evolution, I think that's what branding has done, is just open us up completely for the good stuff and the bad stuff. So companies that are willing to embrace both the good stuff and the bad stuff, they're also willing to really identify and examine their identity that's so much more than just a logo or a website or a big building. I mean, there's so much more that goes into it. It really is about the people, and it's about the mission and promise that we make on a daily basis, but also to our customers too. So those are the companies that I think are going to get it. And I also think that leads to decision-making as far as in those roles. So, you know, before you've got your head of marketing, head of finance, and head of sales, I think really being open-minded to who we put in those positions to, who thinks about it a little bit differently. I really think about branding from a psychological perspective. I really, even the shades that we choose, the shade of green, I mean, it's a whole discussion about that. And I think that's the level of detail and care that companies have to start to project, and that goes back to listening, being open, but also starting to create these custom experiences for the people that connect with them. You can only really do custom and care when you know who you're serving, and you can only know who you're serving when you know who you are. So I think it comes back down to identity, and the companies that are more in line with that are the ones that I think are going to be successful.
Well, that's just some great kind of content and context for everybody, because, I mean, we all, whether you think about it or it's more overt, we try, and a lot of people, we put our best foot forward, but a lot of times you just don't know what's affecting your brand, right? I mean, as little as,
yeah.
I have some very amazing friends who love me to death and who have pointed out some different things on some clothes. We'll just go to the baseline of a brand of how you look on some clothes that are tired. And I think the quote from one of them, who's an executive, was that she wanted to take a jacket I had and actually, like, burn it and never let it see the light of day again, that I should never wear it. So I was to that point that I needed that intervention. So that's all right, 'cause it came from the right place, right?
Yes, that's right. It's all love.
Yeah, it was. It came from a place of love. So, well, Jasmine, hey, 30 minutes flies when we have great conversations. Where can people get a hold of you? We've got about 60 seconds left. Tell us, you know, when your session is at Summer Brand Camp, and then we're going to roll on out.
Yeah, so you can connect with me. I'm on all the social platforms. So I have Facebook, Twitter. You can look for Jasmine O.E., Brand, B-R-A-N-D. So I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find me there. BrandPoint, a company that I started about 7 or 8 years ago. You can find that on all the social networks. You can also go to brandpoint.co if you'd like to learn more about what we do. And also this Thursday I'm going to be talking about striving for a perfect 10, how to create those attractive brands. I actually just said hot brands. I think hot sounds a little bit more, something more intense. We don't want to just be attractive. We want to be hot. But in the context of, we're not really talking about physical appearance, so I think it's going to be a lot of fun this Thursday.
Well, that is perfect. Always can't wait to see it. It's always good to hear your voice, folks. We are out of here.
It might seem crazy.